What's up, guys? How's it going? This is another ATP Sit and Talk podcast with my friend, longtime friend.
Hey, what's up, guys?
Life mentor. Introduce yourself, bro. Go ahead.
Yeah, my name is Max. Full name is Maximilian Yule, but I just go by Max. Been knowing Anthony now for, man, how long have I known you now?
Since you were like
14?
Yeah. 13, 14? It's been a while.
Yeah, so a good 8-9 years, and excited to be doing this with him and seeing all the progress he's been making in life. Just really excited to be able to have this chit chat with you.
I know, I'm super excited, bro. I know we've been trying to like schedule this, and it's been kind of like on and off of scheduling. Schedules are crazy.
Both got really busy lives, both on the move, and you know, you on your grind, and I love seeing it. I love seeing all the stuff you're doing through IG and everything like that. Glad you're back home in Cali.
Thank you, brother. I appreciate that. Where are you from? And tell us a bit like your background, like starting out.
For sure. Well, I'm a California kid. Grew up in LA. I lived in South Central during the... So I was born in 86. Grew up in South Central LA during the 90s. Moved out to Carson. Played football there at Carson. Right after high school, joined the Army for 8 years. Got married while in the Army. That's when I gave my life to God too. Got involved in church while still in the Army. Moved back to California in 2012. And, you know, this has been home. Southern Cal is always going to be home. I like it around the country. Got to see a lot of cool places while in the military and stuff like that. But Cali is always home. And now me and my wife, we are the campus pastors here at Restoration Life. And, you know, this is just where God has us for the time being and open to anything and everything he wants us to do. So that's where we're at right now.
How was transitioning into the Army for you, since you did like briefly mention that right now?
Yeah, so, you know, being in the military was always something I wanted to do. You know, like a lot of kids have their goals, like they want to be a football player or an actor. I fell in love with the military at an early age. One of the first movies I saw was Full Metal Jacket. If you're a parent, don't show that to your kids. My dad showed it to me, and I was just...
What year is that? I never even seen it myself.
Full Metal Jacket came out in the 80s, but...
I'm surprised I haven't. I probably have, but...
If you've seen clips from it, for sure. Yeah. If you ever seen any video of, like, a drill sergeant screaming at people and stuff like that, it's probably that movie. And, you know, these guys, they go off to Vietnam, and, you know, they're at war, and I kind of fell in love with that culture. So I watched those movies, like Platoon, old school Civil War movies like Glory, all the way up to like Black Hawk Down and all that stuff. So I would just...
The A-Team?
A-Team, really. But I did watch the show, and I was really... So A-Team was the show back in the day, and I did want to be Mr. T for a long time. And, you know, it's just... I don't know if it was just the action of it or like that hardcore culture, but I was just all about it. And so I always knew I was going to the military. Just wasn't sure what branch I was going to go to.
You knew what branch to?
No, I didn't.
Didn't know.
Initially, I was going to join the Marine Corps because in high school, I was in Marine Corps ROTC too.
Shout out to our boy Christian.
Yeah, he just got out. Did 5 years in the Marine Corps, my man. But when I did my ASVAB and I went to the recruiters, they wanted to put me in very specific MOS, MOSs are jobs in the Marine Corps. And I just wasn't cool with any of those jobs. They wanted me to be like a mechanic or an engineer. And I'm like, no, I'm cool with that. Like, I wanted to like be a soldier, a Marine. Like, I wanted to be a grunt or just a guy out in the field. And
out and about.
They weren't feeling that at that time. So that was late 2003. And the Iraq War had already kicked off. And, you know, they had slots to fill. So I wasn't going to join the Navy because I'm not wearing that uniform ever, not looking like some Donald Duck Cracker Jack.
Donald Duck.
No shade to the Navy, but I just, I'm cool. And then Air Force, I didn't know what jobs they really had available, and so I was like, those are kind of nicks. So I was like, what's up with the Army? Met with the Army recruiter, really cool guy, I still remember Sergeant Sherman, and he kept it real with me. He like, you know, it's hard, it's challenging, and, you know, it's not all what you see on movies and TV. You do a lot of stuff you don't like to do, like mopping floors, waxing floor, all that kind of stuff. But he kept it real with me. But anyway, I go through the recruiting process, and the Army offers me like 100 different jobs. So I'm like, I get to pick?
Yeah.
they're like, yeah, you passed your test, you did really good on your test, so all these options are open to you, and it's up to you. So I just went home, talked with my parents. Well, my dad at the time, my mom passed away when I was really young, but talked with my dad, like, what do you think? And, you know, I ended up picking a job called Cav Scout, or Cavalry Scout, which is a reconnaissance job. Long story short, just to make it, like, kind of simple so everybody can understand it, if you've ever seen the movie Lone Survivor, when the guys go out, that small team, they're looking for a bad guy, that's essentially what we do. Not on that level, because those were Navy SEALs, they get much more detailed and high-end missions. So we do a very similar job where we go out, we find if bad guys are present or not, and, you know, we report back, and we try our best not to get into the mix, but sometimes that just happens. But anyway, that's... Yeah, I mean, it was always, like, so for me, going into the military wasn't, like, so much a fear or a worry. Yeah. I was just like, yo, it's time. I've been waiting for this my whole
what
life.
What age did you go into the military?
What's that?
What age did you go?
I was 18.
You were 18, yeah. Fresh 18?
I graduated 18. High school in June. I was gone in August.
Dang.
And, yeah, I was in Iraq at 19.
So at 19, you were in Iraq already.
At 19, I put boots on ground in Baghdad. And
you're a real one. I'll tell you that you're a real one. Okay.
Yeah, it was so surreal. Like, you know, it really...
How surreal was that? When you say surreal, how surreal just was that, though?
Like, for a good couple of weeks, I had to keep telling myself, you are really here. Like, it's really going down. Because, like, when you first deploy, you know, we get over to Kuwait, and we're there for about 20 to 30 days, and we're just doing training. And, like, you know, you're somewhere different. You can see it. You know, you see the people, the locals that come on the base, and you look around, there's just sand everywhere, but it still hasn't sunk in. And then we get to Iraq, and like the first couple days, we don't go anywhere, you know, we're just trying to get our stuff situated on the base. And then you go on your first mission, you know, and the first time that gate opens and you go out, you're like, yo, this is a whole nother world. Like, the smell of it, the look of it is just like, this is nuts.
How is it like when you first go out for the first time, like they just let you out? Like, how's that?
So, yeah, it's anytime you go out with your whole platoon. We rolled about 20 guys deep. We had 4 Humvees with us, everybody fully loaded to the teeth. And, you know, you do different kinds of missions each day. Each day, you never know what's going to happen. Some days it could just be, hey, you're going to go into this neighborhood, see how everybody's doing, see if they know anything about anti-American, anti-coalition forces. Guys, mostly guys who try to hurt us. And
majority of them will try to hurt.
Yeah, well, no, actually, and that's the whole thing. That's, I think the picture that got painted for us back home was vastly different than the reality when you get there. So you got a country of millions of people, and the vast majority of these people are just trying to rebuild their lives. So they were under Saddam Hussein's rule for however long, I forget how long he was running things. You know, we have the invasion, we battle out with their military, the country is like in shambles. So, because there's no government, there's no police, there's no nothing. You know, I got there, so I'm getting there in 2005. The war started in 2003, so it's 2 years after this, but the country's kind of like in shambles right now because there's no structure, no government systems, no plumbing, none of that stuff. And the stuff that we're used to, the things that we take for granted so much. And I think that was one of the most real things that you come in contact with. It's like, you know, they can't just go out and get the things that we...
The necessities,
you know, yeah. The basic lack of things. It, yeah. So the vast majority of people are just trying to get back on their feet and relive their lives again. And you got predominantly two different cultures against each other, which is the Shias and the Sunnis. And most of them, even for the... on the general scale, want to get along with each other, but then you got the extremists. So I would say out of a country, how many people did they say were in Iraq? I think it was like 18 million. So 18 million, and then 2% of them are extreme bad guys, but 2% of 18 million, you're talking about a lot of people. That's a lot of people who want to do some harm to not just Americans, but also to their own people. Yeah. So if you were a Sunni, and you're an extremist, you're going after anybody that's Shia. If you're a Shia and you're an extremist, you're going after anybody that's Sunni and the Americans. And so, you know, you walk into the middle of this. So by the time I got there, we were more in a peacekeeping role. Like, hey, we're trying to restore order, trying to get their government back up and help their own police get back established. In the middle of that,
you have this uprising of these different groups. And before we can even do that, we got to stop these guys. And so this
it's like just random groups just trying to like uprise.
Yeah, people trying to take power. It's like, you know, what goes on in Mexico, cartel gets pulled. Everybody wants that guy's seat now.
Yeah.
So government gets pulled, city officials gets pulled, leadership gets pulled. We want our extremist group to come in and establish radical control. We got to stop that from happening because they're trying to rule with violence and stuff like that. And so, but, you know, these guys don't got uniforms on. These guys don't run around hanging banners like, hey, we're the bad guys. They look just like anybody else. So you never know what's going to pop off. You know, at least in L.A., you know what blood looks like.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what a Crip looks like.
Yeah, yeah.
And you know which neighborhoods they go to. Over there, you don't know.
That's stated here.
Yeah, over there, you have no clue. And so, and then when we find out from the people, and most of the people, they were scared to work with us because they didn't know what harm would come back to them. Some guys were brave enough to help us and assist us, and some guys even gave their lives to help us. You know, they would inform, and then sure enough, we come back a couple of weeks later, that guy's gone, kidnapped, wow. Whatever. And
they would be watching, or what? Yeah.
Exactly. Like I said, it's just you don't just know
never
who's
know.
Who.
Dang.
Yeah. You know, who's related to who. And, you know, this, so that the leadership of a community would be called like the sheikh. So the sheikh would come and someone will work
it's
with
crazy.
Us. And, you know, would give us information on how we can find them. We help them. We bring backpack supplies. And this is stuff you don't see on the news. Like, no, everybody always
saw
the
news has, like,
stuff.
Their own perspective.
Yeah.
They really do. Yeah.
And that's any Fox, CNN, I mean, all of them got their own agenda. But they never saw the missions when we're sitting around a school making sure the little girls can go to school because in extremist Muslim culture, that wasn't allowed on the extremists. The ones who were more modernized, who were progressive, they wanted their kids to go to school, but it wasn't safe for them. And so, you know, we're there to help that. Villages, towns need medical aid, but it was considered wrong for them to get help from the West. We don't do anything with the West, but like, yo, this kid's gonna die if we don't help. So, you know, we have to lock down a whole city, secure it, and set up an aid station so they can come. And these are missions that we would do, and, you know, things will pop off sometimes. But, yeah, it was like, I had to keep telling myself, like, I can't believe you're actually here. I remember my first time doing a night mission, and, you know, I dropped my night vision goggles down. We cut the lasers on our rifles. This is before Call of Duty comes out. And I'm just like, it was me. I was in a three-man team for that mission because guys were putting in bombs near the bridge, and we were going to go see if we could catch them in the middle of it. And we're creeping through the streets of Baghdad. I'm like,
you're just randomly putting bombs like under bridges like that?
Yeah, so the reason why they do that is to stop us from getting into areas. So if they blow it up or hit us right there,
yeah.
Then we can't come that way no more. So, you know, we got word of it. Like, hey, we're going to try to see if we can find these guys. Hopefully they come out tonight. You know, and you never know. It's like you're playing a cat and mouse game. And so you got to be stealthy and sneak around. So that way somebody don't see you guys going down the back alley, hop on the phone and say, hey, don't go out tonight.
Yeah.
You know, it's the same way you got lookouts on the corner, like, hey, one time's around the way.
Yeah, fetch this game.
Hide your stash.
Yeah, yeah.
And you playing this cat and mouse game. It's the same thing. It's literally, but just on
just bigger,
bigger scale.
Yeah, on a way bigger scale. It's life or death.
I mean, so, you know, we're out there and, yeah. You know, that's when it really hit me, like, you know, this is for real. This is really happening to you.
Were you ever thinking about when you were out there, like, turning back at that point? Or was it like,
no,
this
was,
is what I chose?
I was 19. Yeah. I was 19, 20 years old. I had my 20th birthday over there. And I was just...
You had your 20th birthday over there, too?
Yeah.
That's interesting. Yeah.
And when you're in the culture, when you go... After you go through training and, you know, you get with your unit, all these guys are down for you. And that was, like, one of my big eye-openings to... seeing the rest of the country. So in my job field, there's not a lot of black guys. You know, oh, for those who don't know, I'm a big black dude. I don't know if you can tell by my voice.
Yeah, see the picture.
But I'm a big black dude. But anyway, like, you know, I had never really been out of LA. Most of my friends were black or Latino. And, you know, you always have the one random white dude who kicked it with the group.
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, here, I'm around guys from South Carolina, North Carolina, Tennessee, Florida, all over. And most of my platoon is white. You know, we had a few Latinos in there and one Filipino guy. But for the most part, it's white guys. But all these guys are down for you. When I say down, I'm talking about they will lay their life down for you in a heartbeat. And this actually proved itself one specific time. We were, we call it a motor pool. It's like a giant parking lot where we put all the vehicles. And, you know, we're just, we're talking, going over the last mission we went on. It's nighttime. Then all of a sudden we hear incoming mortar rounds coming in. And it's a very distinct sound. Like you see all moving, and we know it's coming. And literally everybody dives on everybody. Everybody just grabs somebody, and we cover each other with our own bodies. And, you know, it was in that moment, I'm like, yo, these guys will really take one for me. Like, without even a second thought.
Yeah.
You know, wasn't a hesitation, like, should I not? It was like, incoming, grab each other, hit the ground. And, you know, when you have that kind of support, you know, you ain't worried about nothing. You'll go into hell with those guys. And so, yeah, not to say I was fearless or whatever. It's just a different kind of fear. It's like more so you're anxious about what's coming up, but not like I'm terrified that this is going to happen and I want to quit. At least from my experience. But I know a lot of it had to do with how I was trained, the guys I came up with, and then, you know, growing up in LA. I mean, I saw shooting before I was in the Army.
Just growing up in LA.
Yeah, LA was wild in the 90s. So, yeah, drive-bys. I was...
Six. Were you around for the...
For the riots?
Yeah,
the riots. Yeah, I was six.
You were six. You remember them?
Vividly. You
remember?
So, really? I remember Vermont, between Vermont and Florence. So, that's Manchester and Florence. So, yeah. I live right off of Vermont between Manchester and Florence on 78th Street. And literally my whole block on Vermont was burned. Like, you could see the flames
really
coming. Like, all my favorite stores, my arcade, gone. It was, I mean, of course, you're six. You don't really comprehend what's going on.
It's happening.
You just knew everybody was mad, burning up the whole neighborhood. And, you know, it was wild. It was like, what's going on? And, like, the aggression towards white people at that time. And it was just... It was a very crazy, crazy scene. I look back at it now, I'm like, yo, why you go to their neighborhood and burn it down? Yeah. Why you burn down my store?
Go to PB.
Get out the hood.
When you were out in the military before, prior to you joining, did you have anything like else that you felt interested in at the moment that you were like debating? Or?
I played sports. I did, because a lot of my buddies were going off to college to play ball. They wanted me to go with them. So that was a thought process. And then college... I was really into film, and I still am into film. Really? I got into film in high school.
I never knew that, bro.
Yeah, acting, drama classes, all that stuff. I was in a lot of plays, and actually, now I think about it, I was in plays from elementary school all the way through high school.
Really?
Always into improv-ing and stuff like that, and filming. And so that was probably going to be my thing. I was like, you know, I'm really
come out in Juice 2, the sequel.
Bishop Resurrection. You know, and I always loved music, but for music, I love the sound of music. So producing had always drawn my attention more. And I never really touched it until maybe a couple of years ago. I finally was like, you know what? You always wanted to do this, give it a try. But it was going to be one of those two things, either filmmaking or into the music world. So, yeah, I mean, I don't have any regrets about it. I definitely know I needed the military. It matured me greatly.
Do you feel like it definitely did over time?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I was 21 when I got married. I already had my own place, already paying my own bills.
And you're already 21?
Yeah, so me and Teresa, we met in high school. So me and my wife, we met while we were seniors in high schools. She was...
You guys go way back. Yeah.
Yeah. But we went to rival schools, so she went to Banning, I went to Carson.
Romeo and Juliet, sorry.
Here's the crazy part. At that time, she was dating my then best friend. That's who she was dating.
Really?
And so when we met, he came to pick me up. He had her in the car. They weren't really dating at that time. Because, like, I get in the car, and I see her. I was like, yo, hey, what's up? They're like... You guys dating? Because if you're not, I'll date her.
And that's like, the first thing you said.
That was the first thing I said to her.
It's young Max.
And, you know, we were supposed to go to school, but we ended up going to the movies to go watch Training Day. Not Training Day. Man on Fire. Man on Fire was the first movie that we saw together. And, you know, we just became friends. We became really cool friends. Her and my best friend at that time, they dated for a little while. And then sometime when they were in college, they broke up. He went to the East Coast. She was doing her thing. But we all kept in contact, but just individually. And it was after I came back from Iraq, I hung out with him, and like they were still friends all around the neighborhood, and you know, we just connected a little bit more, and so we started talking on the phone, and it was like a few weeks into talking on the phone. I'm up on the phone with her for like 2-3 hours, man. It's weird. Like, I'm not dating her. We're not talking romantic. We're just like having some conversation. Yeah. I was like, yo, you like her. Cause like, you know, being in high school, even my early time in the military, I didn't really date. I wasn't in a relationship or anything like that. I just did my thing. And for once, this girl gets my attention, and I'm like, yo, you can't talk to her like that. That's your boy's ex. But I couldn't stop talking to her. So I had to hit him up. I was like, yo, I think I really like her. Like, would you be cool if I dated her? So I didn't break bro code. I went and talked to him. And, you know, he gave me the thumbs up and approval. What's crazy about it is both of us are now pastors.
Really?
He's a pastor for Revive Church out in El Monte.
That's crazy.
Pastor.
That's
I'm a pastor crazy. Here. Me and him are still really good friends. We hang out all the time. He was here at our conference.
Really?
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Pastor Eddie.
Life works out, huh?
Yeah, it just
works out.
How it all comes back together no matter what. And so, you know, I owe it to him, I guess, for introducing me to my wife of going on 13 years. But so the military, and like I said, not everybody needs this. It just depends on...
Would you recommend the military to somebody who's like looking...
No.
No?
Because it's not... The way the military is designed, people need to really understand this and not try to change it. The military is designed to fight wars. It's designed to protect the nation. That's it. And people have turned it into this career launching pad or life launching pad. And they want the military to provide all these different things to them. And they feel cheated if they don't get all these things. You're making a choice to sacrifice your life on behalf of the nation. That's what you're agreeing to in the contract. Up to your life. That's what you're writing an agreement to. The military doesn't owe you anything. You get things as entitlements, but they don't have to. And so I recommend for people, you want to be in the military. You want to serve. And then any benefit that comes along with that, that's just icing on top of the cake. But if you're joining the military because you want those benefits, you're going to hate it. You're going to hate it, and you're going to drag your unit down. You're going to drag your team down. And God forbid you guys go to war. You know, right now it's kind of a peacetime. I know like people still see things happen. But the American military hasn't really known severe war since Vietnam. You could take Desert Storm into account, Iraq and Afghanistan. We haven't even lost 15,000 guys in between. You will lose that within a week.
Since what, the early 2000s?
Yeah, so 2001, the whole war on terror starts. We're at 2020 now. And I don't think we've hit 15,000 cows. I haven't looked in a long time since I was in. But I'm pretty sure we haven't even hit 15,000. I'm talking 19 years of this war. In World War II, this could happen in a week. That many guys gone. So it's a whole different world. It's a peacetime kind of military. But we still have real stuff going on. And when it's a life and death situation, I don't want somebody who's halfway about it. I don't want somebody who's in it going like, I'm not going there. I'm not being a part of that.
Did you come across anybody like that?
Absolutely.
So then not everybody's down for it?
No.
No.
You know, some people go like, you know, I have nothing better to do. I just came in here for the benefits so I can go to college.
They tell you at the end of it, huh?
Well, when you're just in, you're having conversations and, you know, you'll run into those people. Like this is one of the reasons I got out because I started to notice leadership doing this for their careers. I'm like, yo, you're supposed to be the guy. You're our commander. And you don't sound like you're really behind what we're doing here. And like I had this one commander, it was after I came back from Afghanistan, this is 2011. And so I'm well seasoned at this point. I joined in 2004, that's when I left for basic training. So this is 7 years into my career. And I get this commander, he's like, oh, you know, the only reason I joined, I thought it would be a cool experiment to see what it's like and all this kind of stuff. And he had all these weird philosophies and things that just didn't coincide with, yo, we got work to do, like real stuff. Are you playing games for your journalism to write a book one day? This isn't what this is about. And, you know, that really rubbed me the wrong way. And I saw a lot of leaders get in and try to career progress. And when you got leadership, and this is in any organization, whether you own a business, a nonprofit, military, teacher, if you're only in it for your own personal success, you will fail your team. You will fail those that you lead. because your only job as a leader is to see your team, those you serve, your students, those you coach, grow and outperform, outshine you. You know, my biggest hope in life is that my son soars way beyond what the bar that I set. But my job is to build him up for that. My hope in the church is that those who are under my leadership grow exponentially beyond me. Not to how big can I get, how many followers can I get, how many people are going to be into what I'm doing. And, you know, it was the good leadership that I had in the military that taught me that. And I'll mention these guys. First Sergeant Aston Cannon, you know, he was always about his guy. Captain Richard Moncom, Captain Dennis Lordy. These guys were some of the most solid leaders that I had. Captain Sean Troyer, who's now a full-blown colonel. Actually, most of these guys are full-blown colonel or retired by now. And, you know, a lot of team leaders and guys in between who cared more about the guys that they led than their own personal careers. And now in the military, you have this mixture. So your military experience can really come down to what leadership you got. So, you know, I run to guys all the time who, no, I love it. I love my unit. I love the guys I got around me. Go one unit over, I hate everybody. I hate everything about it.
When you said leadership, what is leadership to you exactly?
So the general definition, like if you just say the word leadership, is the influence over somebody to get them to do anything. That's the general definition. Now, good leadership to me is the person who is going to be able to inspire and influence somebody to produce the best productivity out of themselves and grow and mature higher than the level that the leader currently is at. I know it's a big definition, but if I'm a leader, my job is not to force a team to do something, not to force anybody, but I want to pull the best out of you. I want you to see the best inside of you and help you not just realize your potential, but see new things inside of you that you didn't recognize were there. You know, anybody that I bring on my team, especially, you know, here in the church or when I worked at the gym or even when I was in security, I would look for both potential and patterns. So potential is, okay, they can grow into this, but before I move them into leadership or into a certain team, I want to see if they're going to have a good pattern set for, can they be consistent over a period of time? And, you know, I think that's very important for any leader to look at, you know, who do I want on your team, you know? And me, I draw leadership influences from everywhere, from military, sports, people who work on film, churches, of course.
You have a good base.
Yeah. But that came not just on my own by happening, but getting around the right people. And coming out of the military, you know, I was kind of lost. I had no clue what I was going to do. I was like, you know, you can go be a cop. I'm like, you'll be a good cop. And I'm sure I could have done fine as a cop. I knew the military world.
I'm scared, bro. I'm scared.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Like, I don't know if I want to be like that guy, aggressive all the time, and because that's exhausting. It really is. But, you know, I thought about, like, you know, you can do good in the neighborhood. You can, but then there's the downside of being a cop too. Is like, you know, what if you're locking up somebody on something that's like really low level, but they got, you know, this many years on probation, and you know, it's just too many things that go along with that. So I was like, I don't know if I really want to do that, and. You know, I wasn't really sure what I was going to do afterwards. I'm like, what do you love to do? And, you know,
comes down to a point where you have to sit down with yourself and really ask yourself.
Yeah. So most people, what they'll find themselves is they'll do what's necessary. Okay, I know I got to pay bills, so I'll get this job temporarily. And that becomes something that extends longer than that temporary window. And I know some of the common language now is like, fine, what's your purpose? But your purpose is not going to be found in a title. And I think that's one of the biggest confusions. Like, what's my purpose in life? And they think it's this job title. Or they say, do what you're passionate about. But what you're passionate about isn't always what's going to make you happy. Because that's another misconception there. The word passion refers to the word suffering. It's more correlated with that. The word passion actually comes from the sacrifice that Christ made. What is he willing to sacrifice for? So if I ask somebody, what are you passionate about? I'm not asking you what makes you happy. Because you might say, you know, playing video games makes me happy. But I was like, can you play video games for 60 hours a week? Nah, I'm not. It ain't gonna make you that happy. You know, people are like, working out makes me happy. Can you do that for 60, 70 hours a week? No. But it's like, what are you willing to sacrifice for? What are you willing to put crazy hours in for? What do you want to be stressed out about? And you realize, like, there's no job title, really, that's going to be that thing. But it's really be more not. So. It's not.
It's really not.
Period. It's really going to be a bigger purpose that's connected to it. And what I came to realize about myself, I love helping people become their best. I love whether that's teaching people, coaching somebody up, training, whatever. I just love...
You still personal train?
Yeah, for fun. But I'm about to get back into it. Planning
you
to do
should,
a...
bro.
Well, I'm going to convert my garage into a gym and then start training.
I heard
people.
About it.
So that's on my to-do list because I love that atmosphere. I love being in the gym, sweating
it's
out.
It's a good feeling, huh? You're around people just trying to feel better. Because
everybody's on the same goal. Like, we all trying to grind here. We all trying to just become a better version of ourselves. And once I understood that about me, I was like, you like helping people realize how strong they are. You like helping people push through those hard things. So my brand, which I'm working on building, is called The Warrior Movement. I want to
working on a book?
The Warrior Movement.
That's the name of your book?
My brand. Which would be, I'll do a book later on. I don't know what I'm going to name the book.
Possibilities.
Possibilities. My family and friends have been asking me to write a book forever.
You should write a book, man.
I'm lazy, man. I'm kidding. If I do a book, I'm gonna need somebody to write for me, and I could just sit here like we're doing now.
You
can
just Siri voice and just, you know, check it every day, every night, and make your own schedule and just talk and let it type it out for you.
You're right.
That's how some people I've heard they've done it.
That's what I think I'm gonna have to do, because more so it's like trying to sit down and organize my thoughts.
Just
I think
out the window just talk.
this helps because I got questions to go off of.
Yeah.
But the whole thing this. The brand that I came up with, once I identified my passion, and then it connected to a purpose, which is my why. It goes back to the great book, if you haven't read it already, it's called Start With Why. It's by Simon Sinek. And my why became to inspire people to embrace the warrior within them. Because we all fight battles. We all got obstacles and things we go through.
We really all do.
And a lot of times when people come against these battles, they back down from them because they don't find it within themselves that they have that ability to win and seize the victory. And I just want to inspire people to bring that out of them. And once I connected with that. So now I look at what jobs can I do that fall in line with that. That's how I became an instructor for a security company, teaching guys how to become bodyguards, teaching them how to work in security and all that stuff. And preparing them for life.
That's crazy.
So yeah, I did that for... From 2012 to 2000, I did that for like 5 years. And then at the same time, I became a personal trainer. At the same time, I worked as a volunteer, as a football coach at Carson High. At the same time, I was a youth leader. So all four of those things connect to my why. Because I can use any one of those platforms to inspire people to embrace that warrior within them. And now I can see what other things can I do. I can make clothing that have statements and quotes and things on them where people put it on, they feel a certain way. You know, I can make videos that communicate this message. I can write a book that when people pick it up or listen to it, they're gonna like, yeah. And not just motivation, but actual tools to implement, because everything that I learned is just that, I learned it. It wasn't innate in me necessarily to begin life with. It's being around the right circle, being around the right people. So I don't associate myself with weak-minded people.
You can't.
I can't. Not them influencing me. I have to be in a circle where I'm influencing those who have weak thoughts. But I'll never be that guy in a room full of people who are very negative, who don't have optimistic views, because I don't need that kind of influence to plague me, which is why I don't get on the news as much anymore, because there's just so much negativity. And that's something I stress to so many people. One of the biggest reasons I became a good soldier was I had good soldiers around me. I had good leadership soldiers around me. The reason why I did well in the gym I had good trainers around me, good mentors around me. I grew in the church because I had great leadership and great people around me. If you want to grow, and this isn't anything, your circle of influence, which is the top 3 to 5 people you spend the most time with, have to be people who drive you forward. And you cannot be the biggest person in that room. Because if you're the biggest person in the room, how can you grow? All you're doing is giving out what you know. And a lot of times people will find themselves in a circle where they're number one, they're the alpha. And they'll stay in that circle because it's uncomfortable for them to be less than. And that's the guys you see plateau. And I know you've seen this already. Those guys who were like the man in high school,
yeah,
and they're still trying to be that.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's like, yo, high school was years ago, bro. Yeah. Like, we got to be on to the next. Yeah, and it hurts when I see it. Like, I'm like, yo, you know, you had so much potential. But the thing was, they tried to always be the alpha and never went to somebody else and like, hey, I need you to deposit into me. You know, no matter what level I get to, and even now, a lot of people say, hey, Max, you made it. You're a campus pastor. You're the one of the lead guys. You're top dog. And I'm like, no, I haven't arrived yet. I'm 33 years old. I got so much more to go.
Yeah.
I don't ever want to stop learning.
You got phase 2, 3, 4, 5.
Right. You know, we just lost a legend in LA. We lost Kobe Bryant. And, you know, he was a hero of mine. Followed his career since day one. And I thought one of the dopest things that happened was after he got done with basketball, he gets into filmmaking and story writing and wins an Oscar first time out the gate. And in a podcast, I heard him talking about, you know, I excelled to as far as I thought I can go in basketball. And instead of me trying to like, okay, let's grind this until I'm dead. You know, I also like doing this other thing, but in order for me to grow in this other thing, I need to get taught more. And so I learned from guys like that. He was the man, the guy. Like, in my opinion, I don't care what nobody says, the greatest of all time. Or like Jordan, LeBron, no. I don't care what stats shade, because there's stuff that happened on that court and in the game that can't go on a stat sheet, and that's what Kobe did. But anyway, I digress. He never stopped trying to learn. Another podcast or interview I was watching with Denzel Washington, one of the best actors to ever do it.
He has a crazy backstory himself. I've heard it. And I'm like, I was surprised. I was like, Denzel Washington. I was like, really? But you'll be surprised, man. Like,
right?
Everybody has a story. It's crazy.
Everybody has a story. But here's something cool that he said. Even late in his acting career now, he's like, every once in a while, he'll still go to an acting class just to see if he can learn one thing new. Just to see if he can get a little bit better. Not that he has to, he's missing something, but you don't know what you don't know. So you can never get to a point where I'm complacent in my life and just go, you know, I like where I'm at, I'm good. Because once you stop growing, you're dying.
Do you feel life is all about perspective?
Yeah, I feel a lot of life is perspective. I mean, there are actual realities, like things that are just facts. But it is a lot how you look at it.
Yeah.
So if I was to look at my situation growing up, and I've sped through my childhood growing up. I grew up the stereotypical black kid in LA. Parents were separated from as long as I can remember. My mom passed away from cancer when I was 10. I grew up in gang infested areas. I didn't have the best grades growing up. Not that I wasn't smart. I could do the work. I just didn't want to. Had, you know, verbal abuse, physical abuse. I was sexually molested. I had every check block to check on, you're gonna end up in a gang or in jail. But I was like, you know, my circumstance doesn't determine my future, and I can use this to push me forward. And that's really one thing that got wired inside of my brain, is you will not be another statistic. And I just told myself that all the time.
I like that.
Like, you will not be somebody else, because I hate that. If you ever watched early 90s movies like Menace to Society, Boys in the Hood, Juice, usually they started off with, you know, 1 in 5 black males,
yeah,
Latino males would end up in jail or dead. And I just kept looking at those things, and I'm like, that's not going to be you. And, you know, 9 out of 10 men do this, 8 out of... And I'm like, I don't want to be... Let me be that opposite number, you know? If it says 9 out of 10, I want to be the one.
Yeah.
And that got just kind of ingrained into my brain at an early age. And I use my hardships as a catalyst, instead of an anchor. You know, I want this to push me forward, not to hold me back. And I think that's one of the hardest things minorities need to let go of, because I hear them talking more than anybody, is, you know, it's not fair.
Majority of it does come from minorities.
But that's how, if you look at how society communicates to minorities, that's what I want people to pay attention to. It's this victimization around you, where it shouldn't be like this.
Perspective.
It's they paint this perspective yeah. to you where you're a victim, you're less than, oh, poor you. You know, yeah, as minorities, there are some things that are slightly harder. But in this day and age, we're talking 2020, we have, this is the best time ever in the history of the planet to be alive. Especially if you're born in America. Regardless of your race, you can achieve anything.
Literally can. Yeah, the world is right here.
Yeah, I mean, we're here in the office. You popped out your phone. You're like, hey, I want to have my own talk show right now. We're going to do it. And nothing is in between us that can stop us. Nothing. The opportunity has been created for us. This could not have happened 100 years ago.
Probably could have in a way, like,
you know, a difficult way. Not even talking about the technology, but the fact that me and you are here having dialogue in the way that we are. You are getting ready to launch your own brand. You're possibly building your own business. What, you're 23 now?
22.
You're 22 years old, getting ready to start your own business. Young Latino man, on your own, completely independent. 100 years ago, you were not able to do this. 100 years ago, there was no way I could be the senior, well, one of the senior leaders of a multi-ethnic, multi-generational church. Are you kidding me? In Los Angeles, where I have older white guys who follow my leadership and authority. Yeah.
We're the first, like, of a lot of kind.
Exactly. Like,
this and generation so is.
That's the perspective we have. We acknowledge that, like, whoa, I got opportunities galore.
Not everybody acknowledges that.
More so, you got so many people who go, it's not fair, it's not right, everything's up against me, so why even try? It's like,
don't you hate when you hear like stuff like that?
It drives me crazy. It drives me crazy for this reason. We come from ancestors who had it so much harder than us. I was raised by my grandmothers. Both my grandmothers were born in the 30s. One was born in Arkansas in the 1930s. The other one was born in Texas in the 1930s. They came into life at the end of the Great Depression. They witnessed World War II. They grew up about 30 years in segregation as women. The abuse, the hardship, the trials, and the things that they went through to raise a family, to grow a family, to reach some level of success, the things they had to fight through. How dare I say, Grandma, it's so hard for me after everything that she went through for me to be here. And if I go even further back, my ancestors, your ancestors, the ones who were chained up and stayed alive long enough to reproduce, to do everything they can.
That's crazy, you know, we're here.
We're here. Yeah. So how dare I use what they went through as an excuse to do nothing? I have to win. I have to succeed. Now, that's just on a social center. Now, for me spiritually, I serve the King of Kings, the Lord of Lords. I'm not going to live in complaint. He blessed me with an able body, with a great mind, and tremendous gifts and ability to be maximized. So I'm not going to look at my situation and where I come from and who I came from as, oh, well, you know, if I had $1 million, Charles, I would make that happen too. That's stupid.
Yeah.
That's such an ignorant way to look at it. It's like, look around you and, you know, all the friends that I have, the great relationships, and not just friends for me. Once I get to know somebody, your family, I mean that. I'm sincere about that. You know, because we invest back and forth into one another. So all of these people are my support, my resources for us to grow something together. They're going to help me, I'm going to help them, and we're going to do this thing together. And that's how you come up. But at the same time, I'm not measuring whatever I get to and I achieve in this life against whatever else is doing. So say, for example, we both start our own brand this year. I kick off the Warrior Movement, you kick off your brand. Your brand kicks off and takes a bigger leap than my brand. I'm not like, oh man, I remember when he was just a young punk kid and yada yada, he ain't nothing now. I'm going to applaud it, I'm going to celebrate it, I'm going to promote it, I'm even going to support it. I'm going to support it without asking for a discount.
Big facts. Yeah.
Yeah. that if you're a real friend, you're listening to this, and your friends are starting their business, support it.
Without the discount, bro, supporting like your friends or supporting local businesses or just supporting at all, it really does go a long way.
It goes so far. How hard is it today to hit the share button?
Yeah, like really.
How hard is it? Like we'll double tap and like all of Rihanna's posts and Beyonce and whatever rapper or singer, and share all their stuff. And so and so said this, but when your boy says a good quote, when your homegirl, when your sister, your cousin does something awesome, you don't say anything? That's the person I'm screaming the loudest for. That's my friend right there. I'm so proud of them. One of my boys, and I hope you get to do a podcast with him. I'm going to introduce you to him. His name is Chris Sweeney. Young guy, too. I think he just turned 30. And he, when we met while I was the trainer at the gym, he would come to the gym. He used to race at... He was a track athlete for Cal State Long Beach, and you know he was at the end of his rope. You know, car about to get repossessed, no place to live, just the hardest of a hard. But he flipped it. Like he started prepping his own meals for himself to keep his body in check, and then people were like, "Hey, can you make those for me?" And like, yeah, it's gotta. This is how much it's gonna cost for me to get the stuff. And then another person, and another person, and now he has his business called Right Meals. And sells to, I think he's a couple hundred people, really? Football players, NFL players, NBA players that he provides
That's
to.
That's crazy. Yeah.
But he did that because he dug deep into himself. And now I'm going to support him. So I was one of his first customers. Yo, and That's every cool, single man. Time I get meals, yo, Right Meals, like, this is what I'm eating right now. He just got his food inside of stores. I'm sharing that on my IG. So proud of my boy. I remember when this was just a dream, and now here you are. I'm going to promote that. You know, we have to be that kind of people who are supporting and applauding and not have this crab in a bucket mentality. It's like, oh, I got to pull you back down to my level. I can't see you succeed. You know, you never know who's going to be a person who makes it and remembers, hey, you supported me. Let me support you.
You just never know. Fact,
yeah, let me give you that job. You know, I know you're really good at this. I made it. You make it. I love Kevin Hart. You know, he brought all his boys with him. The ones who supported him. The ones who, when he had nothing, they were down with him. When he was on these long road trips, they're in the car with him. Not saying, well, you know, I would go with you, but, you know, I would support you. But today it's way too easy to support. You ain't got to kick in $100,000. Hit like,
just a tap, a like, a share, a retweet. Yeah.
A retweet. Come on.
Retweet.
People share the dumbest memes in the world.
It goes a long way. If you can go back in time, man, and tell yourself something, would it be like something that you now, with your mentality that you have now, go back to like 16-year-old Max or 17-year-old Max?
It would be lock into discipline. Lock into discipline. You know, I was an okay football player. I could have been a really good football player if I was disciplined. If I was... Because early on in life, I was very try to do everything, you know. So I would miss a few practices. I would miss a few film sessions. And it was like, if you would have just locked in and focused in the film class, I would get a little bit in, but I wouldn't give my best 100%. And it was like, if you just give max effort to whatever it is you're putting your time to, It'll change astronomically. You know, a lot of people ask me how I became a pastor so young or so quickly. I got saved. I really gave my life to God when I was 23. At 30, I became a pastor. At 7 years.
What made you?
Really, if God didn't call me to it, I wouldn't be here. I had no desire whatsoever to be a pastor. That was not on the career sheet, on the vision board, nothing. Me and my wife, we were at a conference, and we were holding hands, and I remember... it was Pastor Larry Neville, who was actually here at this church. He did, after service was done, he just like, you know, I really feel it, a call right now, like somebody in this room, you're supposed to be into leadership within the church body. And I literally felt a physical tightness happen on my heart in that moment. And my eyes opened, I'm like, what the heck was that? That was weird. And I look at my wife and she had tears in her eyes. And she felt the same thing that I felt. In that moment, it wasn't like, you know, this light came from heaven to shine, but it was our heart, like, this got squeezed, like, that's you guys.
And so we went up, Pastor Eddie and Pastor Roxanne laid hand on us, Pastor Mitch and Pastor Adriana. And, you know, we didn't know at that time, that was in 2010. That's when they laid hand and prayed on us. It was 6 years later that we became pastors. But it's just like, once I locked in and said, God, I'm just going to give you my absolute best, my absolute all, and we'll see what happens. So anything that got presented to me, like, hey, I think you would be good for this. Do you think you can do it? Yes, I'll give it my best shot. And so that started with sound. Then I went into working in media. Then I became the youth leader. And then from the youth leader to youth pastor, from youth pastor to campus pastor. And that's just by saying yes and then giving my best to my yes. And that's really what it is. It's like, whatever you sign on for. So say I go to college. You made the choice to go to college. So give it your best effort. You know, I get it, K through 12, everybody's forced to go to school. I got it. But you're there, make the most out of it. You know, if I'm going to put my energy into music, I'm going to give it my best. I have to do that in my marriage. I have to do that as a father. And your best doesn't necessarily mean you have to give it an ample amount of time. It's effort. You know, I can spend...
Just give it effort.
Give it effort. So I see a lot of people in college, they're studying for ridiculous hours. And I know everybody's brain works differently.
9 to 6 p.m.
And forget everything they study. But they're not as focused when they're studying. You know, they got the computer open, they got the phone open, they got somebody in their ear, and they got all these people around them. And then that's the biggest ride, because they're distracted and not giving the best effort. When I would write papers or study, I would lock myself in my office or in my room or wherever. If I was at a cafe, shove earphones in, cut my phone off, play the music from my computer, but shut down every other window and laser focus. And I would work for about an hour, get up, stretch, relax, come back to it. And like 2-3 hours into it, I'm done. Because I'm just only focused on that, a laser focus towards that thing. And you'll see with laser focus, over time, daily, you'll make extreme progress every single time. But you have to remove the distractions. And so to say to my younger self is like, be disciplined, focus, remove unnecessary distractions. Because even though I'm at a good place now at 33, I know I could have been at a better place had I made those adjustments. Making those adjustments now, it's moving the needle forward even more. But I still have to tell myself that, hey, you're distracted right now. Get off of IG, get off TikTok. I should never got on TikTok. I haven't posted anything yet.
I just downloaded the app today, to be honest.
That's funny. Because everybody kept talking about it. It was about a 2 months ago I downloaded it. And I just wanted to see what it's all about. And I'm like, this is the funnest thing I've seen since Vine. You know,
it's like a Vine, yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, all these different challenges and stuff. And I just like seeing people be silly. And it's good to see some form of social media that's not political, that's not drama, that's not clickbait. It's just people having fun, people being goofy. And I think we need that. And I think TikTok is, hopefully that energy doesn't get into TikTok too. I hope it doesn't.
Started changing their services up.
Yeah, that's, and crazy. Like, yo, now instead of the 30-second clips, it's 5 minutes of this person doing this dumb thing and whining. But yeah, it's like, it's easy to get distracted. So give yourself time to enjoy leisure time, relax time, but also when you are trying to work, when you are trying to grind, lock in, focus, be disciplined, and then stick to it. All progress happens over the course of time. You're not gonna make this massive leap overnight, so stop trying to do that. Stop trying to do 9-10 hour sessions and burn yourself out mentally, physically, when you can say, okay, from 8 a.m. to 9 a.m., I'm only doing this. I'm locking in. That's all I'm doing. Nothing else is going to distract me. And you'll see how much more you get out of that.
I feel like sometimes when you said the burning off, I feel like sometimes you have to do that, though. Like, you have to until, like, you can't anymore.
There's certain
points, I feel.
So, I know a lot of people talk about balance. Yeah. The reality is called rhythm. So, for example...
All right, Kobe. All right.
So, we talk... we got... how long have we been talking?
54 minutes.
Oh shoot! Yeah. Wow, this is longer than I thought. we got conference coming up. Right now, my work days are anywhere between 6 to 8 hours average, with the exception of when I have nighttime counseling and stuff like that. When conference gets close, I will be putting in 15, 16 hour days, sometimes as much as 18 hours, just depending to get everything built. But it's only for that window, for that small time. Then I'm gonna defrag to restore, replenish, rebuild, and go back into the next project. And so it's just like if you watch a fighter train. Leading up to the fight is this big, big spike up in their training. But as they get really, really close, then they taper back down. And then they fight, and they cool off for a second, then they rhythm back up again. So in anything you're gonna build, it's gonna be rhythm. When you're laying the foundation to something and it's the first 2 years, yeah, you're gonna work. You're gonna work crazy, crazy, crazy. Maybe in the first 5 years, you're gonna work crazy, but that's why you have to learn how to work smart. So that way you're working on the business, not in the business. There's so much wisdom, so many books, so much stuff out there. Use them. Use every resource at your disposal. Last thing, leaving with this, for growth, you need four levels to you. You need your heroes, you need your mentors, you need your peers, and you need those you're depositing into. So your heroes can be dead or alive. You don't know them personally, but you get their wisdom from books, from videos, from interviews, etc. So have your heroes. Your mentors, these are people working in your field or around your field who you are connected to, who can influence you, inspire you, and give you wisdom and correct you. You need that. You have to have that. Peers, you need people at your level who are all moving the needle forward. You guys are all grinding together. You may work in the same field, you may work in different fields, but you're all grinding, but you're sharing stuff with each other, and they're your communicating when you're struggling. They're the ones, hey man, I'm with you too, I'm going through it too. Let's keep pushing together. In church, you know, that's fellow pastors to me. They're praying for me, they're lifting me up. Then people you're teaching. If you want to learn something, you want to remember something very well, teach it to somebody. The more you teach to somebody, the more it gets ingrained into you. When you know you have to teach something, you'll level up even more. I grew exponentially as a leader when I really started leading people, and having to and even more so when I had to teach people to become leaders. And so in church, that's my disciples, the people who are underneath me, who I'm raising up. In business, that can be your assistant managers, your supervisors, etc., whoever you're leveling up. So have those four levels to you. That's going to be your necessary circle to success.
I'm going to ask you, I love all that. I'm going to ask you one last question. For what sure. does all the possibilities mean to you? What's your definition of ATP to you?
All the possibilities, you know, it's having your eyes open to every opportunity. And what you'll find is all the possibilities is all the people. People are possibilities, and you never know which conversation you're away from that's going to open the next door for your life. We walk past possibilities every single day. I don't want to talk to so-and-so. Oh, that person's kind of weird. That person's kind of awkward. But that's where it lies. Your possibility lies within people. So that would have to be, if I say all the possibilities, would be all the people.
You know, I look all around, the possibilities for the people. I've thought about that. It's another little spinoff for the
brand. Yeah, that's what it is.
You guys heard it. thank you. Thank you, Max. For a sure. ton on the brand. Thank you as well.
Hey.
I love that you kept going with the flow, too. It was easy talk, easy, smooth, chilling. Thank you, brother. Appreciate
Absolutely.
It.
Yeah, I love you, man.
Thank you, guys. You. Likewise, bro. Thank you, guys, for another ATP Sit and Talk. Appreciate it. I'll catch you guys on the next one. Take care, guys. Well, that's good.